Hello, and welcome to Practical Significance, a podcast to inspire listeners with compelling stories from statistics and data science and to propel data-driven careers forward. Here are your hosts, the ASA's Director of Strategic Initiatives, Donna Lalonde, and Executive Director, Ron Wasserstein.
Welcome, everyone, to Practical Significance. I just can't tell you how excited that Ron and I are to have this episode, the podcast on podcasting. We are joined by four exceptional colleagues, all of whom have podcasts. So we will have Glenn Wright Colopy, who has Data in Science, Roger Peng, who has the Effort Report and Not So Standard Deviations, John Baylor, who is one of the hosts of Stats and Stories, and Richard Zink, who hosts the BioPharm podcast. So join us for a really lively conversation to learn all there is to know about podcasting. And I'm going to get started by asking Roger and Glenn to talk about the origin story for yourselves in podcasting. So Roger, tell us how you got started.
Yeah, so I've been listening to podcasts for a really long time, maybe before they were even cool. And I, you know, one of the things that I noticed is as the data science area grew is that, you know, there weren't quite the ecosystem of podcasts that, for example, like the tech community had. So there were a lot of tech podcasts and talking about computing and technology, things like that. And I didn't feel like we had a similar kind of ecosystem in the data science world. So that's kind of how I got started with Not So Standard Deviations, you know, in terms of a podcast that's kind of like a talking podcast where we just talk about kind of whatever's going on in the world of data science. So
Glenn, please tell us about Data in Science, which actually underwent a name change. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So we changed it to Data in Science because that's what we were talking about a lot, just data and science in general. So we were previously a healthcare data science focus, and then we changed to just data and science to make it super on the nose about what we were discussing. And yeah, so I guess sort of the impetus for my podcast was, you know, I was having a lot of these like one-on-one conversations and small group conversations in person. And it was either someone else helping me, you know, another expert, a technical expert, or I was helping somebody else, you know, maybe a postdoc or a doctoral student. And it seemed a real shame that, you know, essentially we're having these small group benefits, but a lot of other people could have really benefited from hearing those. So, you know, the easiest way is to sort of try to broadcast those and curate those conversations so that more people could benefit. So I think that was the main motivation for me, just to try and make sure that we aren't, you know, hoarding this knowledge in, you know, just one-off conversations, but try to produce it so that a lot of people can listen in and sort of start better vetting their own data science ideas and getting ideas from other places. And I think that is, it's the dialectic aspect of it. It has a huge learning benefit compared to, for example, reading publications and things like that. They all have their own place. But I think that dialogue and that conversational element, I think, is a very good way at arriving at better strategies and better scientific truths.
So thanks, Roger and Glenn. I'm going to swing over to John and then Richard to ask you how you decide on topics for your podcasts.
Well, there are a couple of dimensions on which we think about doing this. One is on the Stats and Stories podcast, we'll think about whether we want something that's evergreen versus timely. So a topic that might be able to referencing something that's happening right now is the component of the timely part, and the other would be just a general topic that could be listened to a year or two later that might still be relevant. Some of the timely topics could be things like side effects of the pandemic vaccines. The more general stuff could be anything from how do drugs get registered. So Richard, not to jump into your space, but also just what's going on in journalism and data journalism. We think about sometimes calendar index topics like something for Valentine's Day or back to school. We work with people at Significance and Chance magazines to think about recent stories that are coming up and how they might be featured as guests. Some of the authors of those pieces being featured as guests. Generally, there's also topics that are of interest to me or the co-hosts. The News Desert piece that we did with a journalism professor from UNC was an example of one that my colleagues picked out. And lastly, we'll listen to topics that are suggested by listeners. So that's the spectrum of options.
Hey, and this is Richard. In terms of topics, so the biopharmaceutical podcast may be quite a bit more focused than the other podcasts and the topics that people talk about. But I think a lot of it has to do with where the section is at any given time. So I identify a lot of the topics based on what's going on in particular meetings. And this can be topics that are of great importance that can really use a deep dive in it. So the one that's coming most to mind recently is a topic on estimands and talking about that and how that's impacting what we do in the pharmaceutical realm. But also in looking at our conferences, looking at topics that may not necessarily get that bandwidth. So this can be anything from vaccines that may not have a lot of sessions devoted to it, abuse deterrent opioids and how the development works with that, and even some particular groups that hardly get any mention at all. So we had a conversation once upon a time with the Center of Veterinary Medicine so that we could better understand how drug products are developed in animals. So a lot of the is trying to educate, but also inform people about different aspects about what goes on in medical product development and the regulatory environment. So those are topics that are probably, to use John's words, a bit more evergreen, but we also have topics that focus that are more specific to the year. So I try to have a conversation with the newly elected chair of the biopharmaceutical section every year to kind of hear what their vision is for the section and what they hope to accomplish during the year. And we also have a conversation with the co-chairs of our regulatory industry statistics workshop to hear about the meeting and all the different topics that are going to take place and all the new features of the workshop. So this is our annual conference. This is our flagship conference that we have every year that's attended by roughly 1,000 people. And I hope that talking about the meeting generates some excitement about it. And I guess finally, in terms of other topics, I try to identify, despite trying to be plugged into things, I am ignorant about a lot of topics. So I think part of it too is just trying to educate myself. And if there's a topic that I know very little about, you know, I can either try to dig into a lot of articles and certainly in trying to have a conversation, an intelligent conversation with people, I can just dig into a bunch of articles, or I can have a conversation with people who are experts in this field and hopefully other people can benefit from that as well.
So I have to admit that I am a complete fan of all of these podcasts. And so this is really a lot of fun for me to have this opportunity to talk with you. I'm kind of curious, John and Roger, how much do you prepare for each episode? I feel like I have a little bit of insight in that because I'm a listener, but I'd love to hear you tell us more. So John, why don't we start with you?
Sure. And I'm sure Ron's asking, prepare, John? No. We do prepare, Donna. I mean, part of it is that it can range from reviewing a number of papers that people have written to reading books. I mean, Tim Hartford had a recent book coming up that just was released as the data detective in the States. And so reading that as background for before we talk to them and Tamandra Harkness and others. So it could be reading a book, could be looking at posts that they've written. If they're doing blogging on this, there could be articles that they've contributed. So there's a spectrum of things to do in terms of background reading and just looking at their presence on maybe in social media as well. The other part of it is in terms of preparation is sketching out a series of kind of questions or more discussion prompts than questions. And lastly, there are some guests that like to have conversations in advance of the recording. So with some guests, I'll end up having a 15 to 30 minute just conversation about the flow of the episode or the flow of how we do recordings and what kind of things might be asked.
That's great. Thank you. And Roger, feel free to talk about both podcasts if you would like.
Yeah, sure. So one of the things that I thought about a lot when I started both podcasts is the kind of sustainability of the effort. Because I had a little experience on other kind of content platforms, whether it's blogging or YouTube videos and things like that. And one of the things I found is that it can be very hard to sustain if it's, a lot of effort to do, of course, on top of all of our regular jobs as doing other things. So perhaps the opposite of John here, I think one of the things I tried to do is to set it up so that we didn't have to prepare that much. And so one of the ways that we do that, for example, is that both of my podcasts, we don't have guests. And also each one has a co-host, a regular co-host, and we can kind of talk to each other. The other one is that, I was just mentioning this to Hillary Parker, my co-host on the Not So Standard Deviations podcast, which is that I kind of write out a brief outline, but I never send it to her. And so she kind of does improv while I read from the script, essentially. It's worked out pretty well for us. We just recorded the 134th episode for Not So Standard Deviations. And obviously, it's a very different format. And I think there's things that opportunities that perhaps we give up by doing it this way. But even now, after 5 or 6 years, it's still fun. It's still kind of manageable. And I can kind of fit it in with all the other things that I'm working on.
That's great. Thanks so much. I shouldn't be surprised, right, that statistical podcasts, there'd be all this variation of content and style. But it's also really worth noting, and I know this is something that Donna cares a lot about, is that these podcasts make a collection of almost unlimited professional development opportunities for statisticians everywhere, especially for our RL learners out there. And it occurred to me that another kind of professional development opportunity related to a podcast is hosting a podcast. You've all learned a lot from hosting your podcasts. And so I'm going to ask Glenn and Richard, for our listeners, give us please the best advice you received or that you would like to share for someone who's thinking about starting a podcast.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, so actually, this is probably a good question to follow up off of what Roger said, because, you know, one of the most important things is make sure that it's a sustainable effort. Make sure that you don't burn out. One, because obviously no one likes to look like a quitter. But also because, you know, if you don't enjoy it, if you don't feel like you'll have actually gained something from it, that's no good way to spend your time. And statisticians and data scientists have such a large opportunity cost on their time. Then you do need to be sure that, you know, doing something like a podcast is worth that time. So on the issue, just riffing off what Roger said, you know, just to make things sustainable, I'd honestly say always work off a topic that you are very interested in. You know, one of my things is, you know, you don't play to the audience, you play to your own interests. And you will find other people who are interested in that thing, but it's a lot more sustainable if you are really covering a topic that you're passionate about, even if it's not as broadly interesting. You're better off having a dedicated small fan base, I think, than sort of this generic but more lukewarm fan base. Another bit is just, you know, obviously be yourself. You know, if you're going to be on talking for several hours at a time, on air, that's not something where you can wear a mask and, or, you know, really cover up who you are. You are going to have to be yourself, and, you know, your personality is going to come through. So I think that's one of the things where it's just like, don't worry, people will like you. Statisticians, data scientists, we're a forgiving bunch. Just, you know, being yourself and having your personality come through. Another quick thing I'd say is just, before I pass it on to Richard, is just, if you're, for example, a graduate student who's concerned doing a podcast, don't wait until you're done with your doctorate. Just jump in and start doing it. And one of the main reasons is because while you're in that university setting, you have nearly an infinite amount of access to guests who everyone wants to listen to. And so I think that's something that's very important, that while you have that huge access to guests, you can even go and see them in person, you know, 2020 notwithstanding, that is a huge opportunity, because a lot of where your time goes is to acquiring guests and vetting guests and things like that. So I would say, even if you're very early in your career, just jump in and start growing, and you'll get better at it with time. If you are in a university setting, definitely take advantage of that, especially if you're early career.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And if I had to sum up my advice in one way, I'd say just to keep it personal. Definitely try to set up your podcast in a way that's, you know, comfortable for you, since you're going to be the one who's doing it over time. And sort of along with that, don't be afraid to change, you know, how things started out. Initially, I think over time, as you're trying to get your voice and figure out the format of how you want to do things, things are naturally going to change over time until you get this rhythm of, well, this is how things are going to be in the podcast and the conversations from week to week or month to month, depending on when you do it. But I think in terms of, you know, the discussions, don't be afraid to also, you know, get into some of the personal aspects of individuals' experience. You can talk very generically about their professional experience, but it's interesting the times that people share their personal stories in terms of how they grew up or their experiences at work that were either very successful or very devastating that sort of shaped how they were as statisticians. It makes for very interesting listening. So of course that's, you know, you may need to tread delicately in those areas, but I think it makes for interesting topics. And I think finally, the one interesting thing about, and Glenn was talking about reaching out to all these individuals with whom you can have conversations with, I think at a certain aspect, trying to abandon fear. So certainly, you know, I don't know lots of people, and, you know, there's key people in the field that I'd love to have conversations with. And, you know, at the end of the day, you may try to get an introduction, but sometimes it's as easy as just sending an email and reaching out and say, hey, are you interested in talking about what you do? And oftentimes people are more than happy to do that. So you may have this fear in trying to reach out to some key people, but, you know, just put that aside and do it.
Yeah, just to build off what Richard said, you know, as far as the poignant moments. Well, actually, I'll first say, reach out to people. And when some of them inevitably say no, just dust yourself off and keep going, because those emails are private. So no one knows how many guests say no to you. They only see the podcasts that actually come out. And also, as far as going from, you know, those more generic statistical and data science experiences to personal experiences, one of the things I found really successful is I actually started doing some episodes just on my own personal faceplants in data science. And people really like those episodes because that is where most of the learning comes in. You know, you don't learn from your successes as viscerally as you learn from your failures and mistakes and things like that. And so, you know, the idea that you, if you try to make as many mistakes quickly, you can learn quickly. And so I think that one of the strategies that I've tried to employ is if I can highlight my own mistakes, then, you know, obviously no one else has to feel uncomfortable about having their own weaknesses exposed. So if I'm happy to be sort of the punching bag or the, you know, the crash dummy for other people so they can see what went wrong as you try different things in data science, you can provide a very good learning opportunity for people without having to worry about making the guest uncomfortable. And then you can also bring in a guest like I did. I brought Kristen Morgan from University of Connecticut, and she provided the sort of the running commentary on my mistakes, which I thought was a very good dynamic. And, you know, that creates a more trusting dynamic while still going through mistakes, which is of extremely good learning value.
So Glenn and Richard, that's good advice. And hey, some of us are already quite experienced at rejection, so it's not as big a deal for those of us like that.
Yeah. And actually, on the speaking about the personal aspect or getting to know the people, I think that's one of the reasons that I'm drawn to podcasts is that I start to feel like I have all of these new friends, at least virtual friends. And so it goes without saying that the podcasts represented here are some of my favorites, but I'm always looking to add to my subscribe list. So I'd like to hear from all of you what your favorites are. And I'll start with Roger.
Yeah, it's hard to pick just one. I hope I can cheat and maybe give two.
Absolutely.
The Casual Inference podcast with Lucy D'Agostino McGowan and Ellie Murray. So Lucy's a statistician, and Ellie's an epidemiologist. They talk about causal inference, but they also talk about other things too. So it's a great podcast. They have a great dynamic, and I really like it. Another one that's kind of not in this area that I really encourage other people to kind of listen to is the Script Notes podcast, which is a podcast about kind of making movies. It's two screenwriters. And I would say not just enjoyable, but actually I think I've gotten a lot out of it just for my own work. And just because like I'm the kind of the common creative nature of kind of both being an academic and also being a screenwriter, there's actually quite a bit of things that they share. And so it's a great podcast. Also, if you love movies, it's a great podcast. So those are just two, as I'm scrolling through my phone right now, there's kind of at the top of my list.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. And John, I know that I've gotten a lot of great reads from you from your annual book list. So now add to my podcast list.
Thanks. And you know, Roger, I saw that they said that your favorites, so I didn't feel any constraint. So a couple that I would mention, just as there were inspirations for us early on, Freakonomics, where there was both an economist and a journalist that were featured on it. One of the things that we thought a lot about as we started and launched ours that was a collaboration between statisticians and journalists. Science Friday has been an inspiration and just as brilliantly done. Tim Harford's work on More or Less or Cautionary Tales are a couple that I would recommend considering. And some that are different from some of the things we've mentioned in our scope include things like Clear and Vivid, Clear Plus Vivid with Alan Alda, 10% Happier with Den Harris, and Boot Camp for the Brain with Darren Brown are three others that I find are really interesting and engaging.
Oh, that's great. I'm definitely going to check out those three because they are all new to me, which is really exciting. Richard, how about you?
Well, I have to say most of my other podcast listening, most of it I focus on entertainment or things to get me to stop thinking about all those voices in my head related to statistics. I would have to say the podcast I've listened to the longest is the WTF podcast with Marc Maron. This is more of an entertainment. He talks one-on-one with different celebrities, whether they're writers or actors. And, you know, they just sit down without a script and have a conversation for 60 to 90 minutes. And I'm always amazed at, you know, how he can get into all of these interesting stories and background of people and how they've sort of, you know, addressed challenges in their life or engaged in their work. Probably one that does touch on statistics a bit, the Pod Save the People podcast. It's a podcast that's done with Pod Save America. They often talk about a lot of policy decisions, and they do bring in research and statistical topics to sort of talk about the impact of different decisions and their effects on people's lives that I think is pretty interesting. And I think more for my entertainment, there's a podcast series called Improv Beat by Beat. So I have been, well, before the pandemic, I've been taking improvisation classes to better develop my communications and interactions with people. And this podcast series, I think, is a pretty interesting way of helping develop those skills.
Oh, that's very cool. And Richard, I'm right there with you with Escape. So I read Mysteries to Escape, and Red or Dead, a podcast about mysteries and thrillers, is one of my favorites. Yeah, so that's very cool. Okay, Glenn, so your favorites.
Yeah, well, I'm going to sort of come in like hyper opinionated and just say, like, for example, I think the Lex Fridman podcast is an example of, I have to say, it's sort of to me like a gold standard of scientific podcasting that still has this wide appeal and has, you know, addresses general intellectual curiosity. And I think that that one is really good because it's the Lex Fridman podcast, because I don't think you can really become a good scientist while really staying focused on your own bubble. So I really like having a scientist, and particularly someone from the machine learning community, inspecting these variety of domains. Also, Julia Galef has a podcast called Rationally Speaking. I think it's actually either sponsored by or associated with the New York Skeptic Society. So Julia Galef fans, if you, she has a podcast, which I think is really cool. And I like some of the ideas that revolve around, you know, critical reasoning, because I don't think that you can ever be good enough at critical reasoning. And people take it, it's such an essential skill, but people take it for granted. So I like how she is able to curate some very like candid, useful conversations around that. For some of the sort of more entertainment side of things, there's actually something called the Junk Science podcast, or also Wrongful Conviction Junk Science. And the people behind that are Josh Dubin and I think it's Jason Flom. And so what I found about these are, it's junk science, for example, around the forensic community and sort of the testimony that's used to put people behind bars. Some of these podcasts will get your blood pumping, because there are many cases where there's these like weird cults of personality around really bad science that's used to put innocent people behind bars. And it's, I think it's really telling how, you know, these so-called scientists get this unshakable faith in their field when they should be further scrutinizing things, especially when so much is on the line. So that one is called Wrongful Conviction Junk Science. And I think that that one's really interesting. And I think that it's important for scientists to watch because it's only, I think it's like one season. So it's, you can watch it all. But I think that's very important because, you know, scientists, we do need to be critically evaluating. And then I guess one other one is Talking Machines. So that's with Neil Lawrence and Katherine Gorman. So obviously, like, I'm a real big Neil Lawrence fan. He's obviously a luminary in the Bayesian nonparametric area. He's also just a really funny guy and really nice in the number of times I've met him in person. So I guess maybe there's that interpersonal aspect. But yeah, I think those Talking Machines, I'm not actually sure if Talking Machines is still running or if it's just on a long hiatus or something like that. But any of those, I think, are very good if you're trying to just get into that role of critically evaluating. And these things are all done by, with the exception of the Junk Science podcast, done by professional scientists.
Those are great suggestions. Thank you all. I will add those to my library and then have some more podcasts that I'm behind on and feel guilty about being behind on. So let's switch back to your podcasts and ask you if you have, I'll call on each of you, if you have a favorite story from your podcast experience. And Richard, let's start with you.
Thanks. And I don't know that I have a favorite story per se, but one of the things that I do ask at the beginning of episodes where, you know, there tends to be a small number of people participating is for them to sort of describe their statistics journey and how they got into statistics. And, you know, oftentimes it goes way back to, you know, elementary and high school where people identify their interests. But I think the ones that perhaps are a bit more interesting are all these individuals who went off in different directions and sort of found statistics to their higher education or experienced it through their career. And totally changed the direction that they were going in terms of what they were studying and what they ultimately wanted to do. So they had conversations with people who were studying dentistry, forestry, zoology, you know, physics, chemistry, you know, all kinds of different topics that ultimately they fell in love with statistics along the way and decided to make a career out of it. And I think that's pretty powerful that even if you know, we don't reach people earlier on and trying to encourage them into the discipline, that there's still opportunities for people to find their way into the discipline later on.
Thanks, Richard. I love hearing those stories as well. Glenn, how about you?
I'm not sure how much of a story this is. And actually, I'm not even sure. This might have been when I was recording Richard Zink. But one time in my old podcasting area, which was right next to a window, a coyote, like a giant coyote, walked by my window as we were recording. And it was a good thing that was an audio recording at the time, because basically I had to edit out probably a 5-second string of surprise profanity when a giant coyote walked by me and the guest was sort of wondering what was up. Yes, that's one thing, is the most exciting of my stories. But I'd say probably a better story is probably, you know, this has been a huge learning experience. And one thing that I've noticed is that many of the statisticians and data scientists who have come on the show, it doesn't matter, you know, if they differ in methodology or they differed in what their applied field is, they very commonly share a lot of concerns about how they personally can add value to the field. So essentially, they're very self-conscious in a good way about what they should be doing to maximize the value that they're adding to their scientific or statistical community. And what's interesting is that a lot of their concerns revolve around very similar issues. So maybe that's a bit more of a meta narrative that surprised me. It's been humbling in many ways, because once you start talking to people, you know, when you start a podcast, you're wanting to make sure that it's a really good, high quality podcast. You do all your preparation yourself, but then the question is like, well, will the guests be well prepared? Will they take this seriously? Things like that. And one of the things that I think was really important for me was to notice how well these guests did, and they didn't need Glenn to get it done. And I thought that was very important, because essentially it helped me put myself in my place as far as better appreciating everything that other statisticians and other perspectives have to offer. I doubt most people who are starting a podcast will be, you know, like thinking that they're the only person who has something to say. But, you know, there's an element where you can appreciate the magnitude, truly how much someone else has to share. And I think that's important. And maybe it's a little bit ironic, because I think I've gone on too long for this answer, talking about what other people have to share. So I'll let other people answer now.
Thanks, Glenn. And I can imagine how upsetting that coyote was, since I think you record on the third floor, right? So I could see why that was stressing.
Oh, this one was, I made the mistake. This was down in my my previous podcasting basement. Now I'm 3 floors up, perfectly safe from any nearby coyotes.
So thanks. And Roger, let's turn it over to you.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I've always kind of wondered is, like, you know, I've never quite figured out what episode is going to be of interest to the audience. Every time I think, oh, this episode has been horrible, or maybe we shouldn't even publish this. It's always been kind of random whether or not people respond to it or not, it seems to me, or at least I can't explain it. And I just, one episode we recorded, Hillary Parker, my co-host, she actually went back to her kind of childhood home to clean it out because it was being sold. And she was going through her, she was just talking about her entire My Little Pony collection that she was wanted to save. And, you know, we didn't talk about data science or statistics or anything in that episode. And then afterwards, after we published it, all these people were like asking, well, what happened to the ponies? What happened? Were she able to save them all? It was all this drama around the My Little Ponies. And so it was just, I always find it odd, you know, what people respond to. And I can never really predict what it's going to be.
You'll have to tell us the episode number for the pony episode so we can find out for ourselves what happened. John, let's go to you.
All right. Thank you. Well, we did an episode a while ago where we said this was following up a conversation we had with Kerry Mengerson. And so we were going to do the Better Bays competition. And we asked people to submit a headline and a lead sentence for a story that would describe Bayes methods, and just sort of in a general sense. And ultimately, we were expecting a series of entries. We got a number of really interesting entries, but one that ultimately was the winner was a haiku. So someone had submitted a haiku for it. It was brilliant. And we ended up having that guest. It was Steven Ziliak joined us. And just as a quick follow-up, we're coming up to our 200th episode this summer. And so we're going to do a meme contest. And so we're going to do the meme median mode contest. And I just can't wait to see what kind of interest this generates and what kind of things are submitted. So I'm anxiously awaiting kind of this next great story to emerge.
Well, that's really fantastic, John. Well, this has just been the most wonderful conversation. I really want to thank Glenn, John, Richard, and Roger for sharing with us about their podcasting experience. And I definitely want to encourage all our listeners to listen if you haven't subscribed to their podcast, follow them on social media, because you definitely don't want to miss out on the great stories they tell. And now, as is the tradition of Practical Significance, I will turn it over to my colleague Ron for Ron's top 10.
Thanks, Donna. We've enjoyed listening today to our statistical podcast enthusiasts, and I felt it was important to try to help them along with their work. So we've collected here at Practical Significance some ideas that they probably should reject for future podcasts. So Glenn, Richard, Roger, John, get your notepads out, because Practical Significance now brings you the top 10 bad ideas for a statistical podcast. Number 10. Why your probability of getting a date actually is less than zero. Number 9, the joys of convenience sampling. Number 8, building statistical tables the IKEA way. Number 7, computation-free statistical tests. Number 6, eye-catching graphs that convey no information whatsoever. Number 5, foolproof ways to get the p-value you want. Of course, that's my personal favorite. Number 4, modern Bayesian methods for predicting the past. Number 3, do what feels good, why experimental design is overrated. Number 2, just bring me the data. Don't bore me with how you collected it. And the number 1 bad idea, statistics podcast, stop doing Monte Carlo and just go to Monte Carlo. So that's a wrap for this month's episode of Practical Significance. Thank you for joining us. I was going to say good night and good luck at this point, but Donna told me that that's already taken. So I'll just say that we look forward to a new conversation in August, right before the joint statistical meetings. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Thank you for listening to this edition of Practical Significance, the podcast of the American Statistical Association. A new episode will be coming your way next month from AmpStat News, the ASA's monthly membership magazine.